Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Really appreciate all of you joining us. And as we're getting to the end of the new year, I want to go ahead and wish all of you here from Cannabis Radio on behalf a very happy new year as we get into 2024. And really got a chance to have a great guest, and I want to go ahead and feature this here on the program. Now, this interview I actually conducted on a different program. I won't mention what, but, you know, obviously I do some other independent programming, but I will just leave that out. But this interview I also wanted to go ahead and include here on Blunt Business because it is absolutely related to the business. Really, we talk a lot about what's going into 2024 and the current issues that are going on today. I got the chance to go and speak with the owner of the Cannabis Law Report, the owner of the National Interdisciplinary Cannabis Symposium, and he hosts a podcast of his own, of which I talked to him about pretty specifically on the program, the Karma Koala Podcast, Sean Hawking. And here is the interview right here. He's done a lot of work when it comes to into the legal industry, a lot of projects he's on. He's been in the legal publishing industry for 25 years, worked for a law book company and Point of Law in Sydney, Australia. And upon moving to London, he worked for Legalese UK, the creator of the Legal 500 series, the Law Awards concept, and Legal Business Magazine as their international print media sales director. Right now, he is currently hosting a podcast called the Karma Koala Podcast. And he also is the editor of the Cannabis Law Report. Website is cannabislaw.report. I'm here with Sean Hawking. And Sean, joining me here from Australia, thanks for staying up with me.
No problem at all. It's late here, but always happy to talk.
So if I were doing something over on Cannabis Radio, I'm going to go into some things where one thing in particular in America, and obviously you keep up with what is going on legally around the world. And one of the things that's very point of mind now, when I've talked to accountants, when I've talked to virtual CFOs over on Cannabis Radio, they've been talking about how the DEA now is looking to go, that right now the DEA is considering a rescheduling of cannabis from Schedule 1, which would be still an illegal substance, to Schedule 3. And one of the things that would be important for that, it wouldn't change the status of how, without a medical marijuana card or not being in a state where you have adult use or medical cannabis use, one of the things that would be changing for cannabis businesses is the area where Section 280E, Internal Revenue Source Code, that causes companies to not be able to go and write off for tax purposes. So they accrue more taxes upon the sales tax, the revenue taxes that they already get accrued upon on a regular basis. Once this changes, it would change around. Is that something you've heard a lot about from legal scholars and attorneys?
I've actually had a lot of a number of conversations on the Karma Koala podcast with people in the industry, lawyers, accountants, and also some sort of smaller end business owners, as well as a couple of guys actually I spoke to in California who run brand and advertising. And as you say, The number one thing is the 280E, allowing them to eventually have a little bit more freedom from the tax office. But the other thing that it really is sort of hasn't been discussed as much is it also changes the amount of federal research funds that can go towards cannabis. So that means as soon as we hit Schedule 3, there's a lot more money that can be doled out towards towards educational institutions, etc. Mm-hmm. So that allows business to actually work on data that they can actually then present formally and create, improve and create more business.
There's a lot of cannabis podcasts that like to just do the, we want to get to know you better, know about your background. Tell us about what you're doing. I like for other podcasters to know that if you're bringing them on to talk about particular subjects and you're a niche-focused program, let's get to the actual heart of the matter. I couldn't change the host's mind if I tried, and that's okay. If they want to do their shows like that, it's fine. It's a sponsorship. But in the program that I do, I want to give people something tangible and take away. In your podcast, in Karma Koala, I notice a number of the names that you have on are people I've had the chance to interview as well with, like Corwin of Stone Road, Jonathan Bohan of WeedR, and I see Aaron Bloom of Doc MJ. I've had a number of those people on, and one of those things is, like I said, I like to go and talk current events and what things are the obstacles and issues they're talking about
I'm very boring. I always start the show with we obviously quickly cover somebody's bio, but essentially I was everybody you know who's talking to me knows we're talking about the one major thing in cannabis, which is compliance. Right. And every other topic that we discuss, whether it be rescheduling or could be safe banking this week, it could be a whole range of topics. And it's always with cannabis, it's all compliance. So, my background obviously is legal publishing. That's what the podcast comes out of, the website idea. So I started the publishing the website in 2015, the podcast about 2018, like you, around about the same time. And the main reason I did that was to put a voice to that boring word compliance. Everything is about compliance and enforcement, and I could probably say the word compliance at least 200 times in this discussion, because in the end, nothing works in cannabis without right. that word.
Now, how much time do you like to go ahead and focus on, if you need to go ahead and put a little bit of background and context on the guest? I mean, it's one of those things where, I understand for some hosts, if you want to take a few minutes to qualify the guest and show, hey, this person's important, we're going to talk about something really important with this guest, I'm going to show you why, and then we're going to get into it. Is that kind of the idea where you go with it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do a couple of things on my podcast. Is first up, I'm a bit of a music freak, so I always introduce and come in with some music that's a little bit different to start with, and then I have a very quick discussion about who the person is. But anybody listening to me and reading my site knows that I'm the only guy that does law and cannabis specifically, week in, week out, day in, day out. So they know that the conversation on the Karma Koala is going to be about legal related issues. And out of that conversation for 5 years, the lead word has always been compliance, and it will be after, if and when federal comes in, until you and I, the day we die, that is going to be the conversation. If you're building a new industry, is how to make it compliant and work within the existing economic structure. And because there's so much history to cannabis, more so than psychedelics, which we can touch on in a bit, which is a little bit different, well, way different, actually. Many people might think it's something similar, but it's actually way different. But cannabis, an illegal market was created before the war, the Second World War, and has been in existence nigh on 100 years. And so compliance on both sides of the fence, on the black and grey market and then on the regulated market, whether that be state or federal, is always going to be the main part of the conversation, compliance and enforcement.
So I got the chance to, in the almost 20 years, it'll be in January, or excuse me, in August next year, that I'll have done podcasting. And there were two legal shows that I specifically worked on, first and foremost. One is called Legal Pad. It was actually when we were, when I was actually hosting, I was producing a show for Why Not, Y-N-O-T, which is an adult website company. And we talked about the various areas when it came to the USC Code 2257, 4472. That was really the focus at that time of the documentation and all the paperwork that was being done on the adult industry. So porn specifically, and digital, because of all the changes that digital was creating across the board, when it was not so much, you know, actually just magazines and just videos. What we had then was, after that, I actually produced for the show for over 10 years, the Cyber Law and Business Report. And that was a Bennett Kelly Internet Law Center. And it was a great show to put on. We definitely went into areas of politics, definitely took in areas of Washington, and looking a lot into tech in terms of what was being changed. But specifically, it was just looking at very issues of, you know, the cyber attacks, of looking for people that were being, you know, revenge issues, people being attacked, just privacy issues across the board. And those hosts never really had an issue of going right into the legal jargon and going into various cases and being really in depth. Is that something that, when you look at your audience, what have you learned is really how they've responded to how deep in the weeds you can get into actual content? And do you feel like you need to keep it a little more basic and pliable for them?
I tend to keep things, look, most of my listeners know the topic already very well. Right. So discussing in great detail a specific case, for example, or a specific piece of legislation isn't of great interest to them because they know that already. What they want to know is what other people or possible clients are thinking in the industry with regard to a specific topic. And also I think a lot of the podcasts that I hear in the States, as you say, there's a lot of very long-winded introductions, and then there's a lot of chatter where everybody's talking in sort of cannabis code. And what I'm trying to do with my guests is be fairly straightforward and say, look, these people are working in a very sophisticated and difficult industry to work in. And what we're really trying to say is that to understand the industry, you need to understand the people working in it and around it. And they have a lot of knowledge, depth, and that needs to be got across to the listener, whether your listener is going to be a legislator in a state that hasn't done something yet, or whether your listener is somebody who's thinking about starting a business in another state that maybe is only legalized or regulated medical marijuana rather than regulated adult use. So what we're trying to do is really get across that there are certain issues. We don't need to really dig really deep in the podcast to those issues, because that, you know, for example, if I'm talking to a lawyer, if there's a possible client, they're going to have that conversation anyway. So what we're really trying to do is illustrate the quality of people in cannabis, because there's still a lot of sort of quiet thinking in the world outside cannabis that it's all a bit sort of early 70s high times sort of vibe still, where actually we're in an entirely different world. And you know, you wouldn't believe it or not, people still think like that, and it's just getting that across. That also, I think it's very important, cannabis at the moment is very US centric, and I'm also trying to get across with my guests that actually we're talking about a global change and a global industry. So, for instance, there's a certain amount of stuff happening in Australia at the moment, but for example, a very active market at the moment, or a very active jurisdiction, as we'd say in on the legal side of things, is Thailand, and how they opened up their market, and now they're deciding actually they want to try and sort of tighten things up in the adult use side. What's happening in Europe a lot with CBD at the moment. And also quite a lot of changes in places like Africa. And we really trying to get across that it's a global industry, just like any other sector. You could be talking about, I want people to think it's as boring as shipping, basically. Again, and that's, I'll fire back that word again, compliance, because it's all about getting the issue across that it's an industry that needs to move forward, and everybody needs to sort of grow up a bit about it and not think of it as, I want 28% THC, and that's the end of the conversation. So, to go back to your question is, I don't think we need to dig right into the minutiae of a certain piece of state legislation or a particular case to illustrate the point. It's more important to show that the people I'm speaking to know this already, are very intelligent, and can speak about it in an adult manner. And it's something to be taken seriously.
I'm here with Sean Hawking, the owner of the Cannabis Law Report and the host of the Karma Koala podcast here on Blunt Business. We'll be back with more after this.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back. I'm here with Sean Hawking, owner of the Cannabis Law Report. We'll be talking a little bit later about the National Interdisciplinary Cannabis Symposium and the Karma Koala podcast, with which he hosts. When you bring up part of where those guests come on and they're not coming in with that 70s high time, that the stereotype that, we're trying to get away from, you get a chance to really realize the expertise, the professionalism of those that have been coming in from other sectors. And I'm sure you realize how many people you've brought onto your program, Karma Koala, that have come in from various sectors to come into the space and join the cannabis industry from Fortune 500 companies or wherever levels of, C-level work that they've done to come into the space, bring their skill set into the space and have a real understanding from the legal end, the compliance end, from the business end, the cultivation end. And I mean,
well, look, that's 100% correct. And it's interesting you should mention this, because a lot of people rushed in 4 or 5 years ago thinking, with a normal gold rush thing. And the interesting thing is the people who have remained within the sector have become very, very devotional is the wrong word, but it's sort of close to that. They've really understood that there's a real future, and that they become wedded to it. So it's like anything new. A whole lot of people come in, and the ones who are just chasing the money normally leave fairly quickly. But there's always left about 20% of people who some of which probably didn't really believe, as they just thought it would be interesting. But I've noticed with the people that I've speak to have come from other sectors, they really want to, they see it as a way of change. And this sort of leads into what you touched on very early in our conversation about people talking about the market.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now, with regard to psychedelics and legislation in terms of therapies for psychedelic compounds. And I think, these two sectors, they're quite different, but they work hand in hand because it allows people to work in an industry that they really believe in. And they're also understanding that because of all the blocks that are put in the way, it's not easy money. None of it is actually easy money. And that in a way that creates more knowledge, more love for the sector, and more desire to make it work for the people, that not for themselves so much, but for the people who will benefit from the range of products and ideas that are generated from this sector. And that's why I carry on working in it. And especially with lawyers, you know, it's creating a whole range of different types of lawyers. You know, some of them are just working your standard, what, you know, white shoe law firm type approach, doing deals, bang, bang, bang. But it's also now bringing up lawyers, for example, who work entirely in environmental law and cannabis, and anything from planning, but also looking at the way that it's becoming another agriculture industry, and that should be wrong. Cannabis should actually be treated, should lead the way to teach other parts of agriculture that you can do things in a different way and improve the planet as you create a large industrial sector. So there's a whole, you know, that's just one example of the types of things that people are doing just from the one word cannabis.
I noticed from some of the guests you have on as well, because at the same time, there might be some guests that you have on that I might have had on before or after you. That would tell me that the PR firms that are aplenty in the space, some that are very, you know, I don't want to go and start naming names because I'm going to miss somebody. But there's a lot of good PR in the space that have come in to represent companies, and they're always seeking podcasts like ours to get their guests on, of course, paid or to media. They're getting something out of this, but also it's a chance to go ahead and connect with these guests that we can use for, just like you do right now, with some of the subjects we can go ahead and talk about. You obviously kind of go in the same mindset that I've been trying to do as well, where I want to use them not just to go and talk about their background. Like, that's a good focus. We can bring that up, but I like to go into the fact of, let's get into the actual things that they can actually talk about, that we can actually inform the public on. What can you tell me about what you've done with the PR companies? And if you have a lot of them that reach out to you, and, you know, how much does it really help to fuel the guest pool in your podcast?
Well, initially, not at all. And I chose my guests directly. Mm-hmm. And mainly I was choosing specifically lawyers. But actually, recently, in the last sort of 8 or 9 months, I've reached out to PR companies and I've asked them to get in touch with me if they have interesting people, because I've begun to, you know, I want to get a wider range of voices on the show. You know, I specifically stuck with professionals to start with, so essentially CPAs and lawyers, and then some policymakers and legislators. But I'm now sort of pulling more from the industry, because it sort of goes back to that last thing I said was, mm-hmm. 5 years ago, there were lots of people in the industry I didn't really want to talk to, because they were just there for a short period to, you know, jack up a share price or get a product launched. But now most people I'm dealing with that are given to me by these PR companies have started their own companies, or if they've joined from somewhere else, they want to make something of the company that they're in, or if it, or it's longer term, they want to make something in the industry, and not just in the US, but as a global sector. So, you know, what I'm interested with a lot of these guys is I'm talking to them now because I want to be talking to them once a year or once every, you know, twice a year even, mm-hmm. and to see where their story, so to speak, goes over the next 3 to 5 years. You know, I've got this view that we probably won't see regulation on a federal level until, if we're really lucky, the last part of the next presidential cycle, or even the next one after that. So I'm looking to find and follow people within the sector as they have to negotiate a whole range of rather sort of horrible and difficult issues, while the politicians mess around with what inevitably has to happen, and watch them, you know, grow a skill base that is basically unmatched anywhere else on the planet. And then be able to say to people, look, you know, you're seeing people who are building companies in a whole range of areas that support this sector, whether it be, you know, a brand person, or whether it be a packaging person, or whether it be a small business person in terms of running retail, et cetera, et cetera. And following those people through this process of getting to federal regulation, which then creates a whole new world, which gives us another 5 years of conversations, 10 years of conversations right. as they operate in that world.
I want to ask you now, you do focus mostly on the U.S., but you're based in Australia and you've been in England based before. Do you do any focus at all on world markets? I mean, I know we have, there's obviously the markets that are being built up in Latin America. I mean, even just a little bit on what we've done on business on the program I host, we've gotten a little bit of talk about Africa when it comes to Malawi opening up as a, or Lesotho as becoming a country or countries that were able to go ahead and have medical cannabis use, and seeing if there was going to be any markets that were going to be opening up in, say, in Europe. We've been seeing a lot of talk about that, or in South Africa. And is there any focus on that that you ever put into because of the fact that you're international? But you obviously look at the U.S. very importantly for
well,
what
the U.S. The U.S. is where it's happening. I mean, you know, right. look, Canada is a small mature market. Australia is a small mature market that operates under sort of basically a cartel environment. You know, where and
well, and part of the cultivation, you're getting a lot of product that's coming in from Canada, if I'm correct, import export.
Exactly right. But I mean, in terms of I find with the conversations and the people I work with, especially in the professions, the knowledge, partly because of the confusion, but partly because the market is so big, really the US will lead the world in this industry, whether anybody else likes that fact or not. You know, as we've discussed, there's people coming in from other Fortune 500 companies who worked in the global environment before. So, you know, they know what their end plan is, of course, is once there's federal legislation, the UN has to change its mind. Once the UN changes its mind, everybody else changes their mind. The US is at the center of that. They then have an industry that they can export intellectual property as well as product or so you know that it all comes from the US, but there's other markets that will develop around in parallel with that, and some will stay more independent from the US market than others, just like any other. You know, the fact is the US, you know, as much as people like to say it's an economic decline, it leads the world in most sectors, and it's always going to lead the world in cannabis, because its only competitor on a global scale is a country called China, who's going to have absolutely nothing to do with cannabis for, you know, probably 400, 500 years minimum. They don't change their minds quickly about anything. So this is where all the knowledge is coming from. These other markets exist, are important, and have their own stories and have their own histories. And I cover them a reasonable amount, as much as I possibly can. Right. But you know, the central market is the US, and the central part of the central market is the West Coast of the US, and that's just a fact. It's right. not going to change.
No, you're right. And it's not like I even try to go looking out for outside of the US. I mean, we covered a lot of Canada when they first legalized. There was just so much for me. It was a matter of how much are we learning specifically when it comes to what the role model is going to be for the rollout of legalization, which I say personally is 3 to 5 years down the line. If even that, full-fledged federal oversight, I don't see it right now, because way right now Congress is being set. There's just too many things policymakers are doing right now where while the bills are already on the table, they could be put up for vote anytime. Safe banking, yes, same thing. And other various bills, they're just not being touched right now. I mean, if President Biden wanted to go ahead and win re-election, or any Democratic or Republican presidential candidate wanted to win election, cannabis would be one of those areas that would really put someone over the top. Personally, I think that is. But they're not going to do that right now. Plus, there's not enough lobbying money coming in from cannabis with the help of tobacco and alcohol to make that happen. Now, these are the normal subjects. These are the kind of things I would say specifically on Blunt Business where I don't mind being editorial. I will go ahead and speak when I see things from the guests I've brought on and from the information I read regularly. Like, I'm not even a member of the cannabis space. I don't even smoke or ingest it. I never have. But I manage cannabis radio. But that's been out because I'm an advocate for the space. I believe in legalization, and I want it to happen. And I would love to see it where the States Act came into play, state-by-state basis. They can all vote on what they want to have in terms of if those states want to have medical or adult use, rock on, go for it. Because to try to get every state to go on board with it, like Texas or, you know, like, you know, some others that are out there that I don't think they would ever go and take that on themselves. That's different. Now, is there anything you do in terms of where you're just facilitating the guests, you're getting the information, you're fact-finding, you're learning. Do you ever put your own editorial input into each podcast?
In each of my podcasts, it's a bit like this. We're having a conversation, so by default, there is editorial input. But I try with my podcast to let my guests lead as much as possible,
right?
And just ask them some fairly direct questions throughout our half an hour conversation. And every now and then I'll throw in a little bit of this, but be simply because most people who listen to me will also be reading my website, which is again, I try and obviously put a balanced approach to everything on the website, the pros and the cons, but essentially it's a cannabis website. Therefore, there's a reason. There's a reason I'm publishing a cannabis website is because I do tend to believe as difficult and as confusing as it can be sometimes that regulate. I have a fairly libertarian view towards drugs. So if you don't regulate the whole lot of them, not so nice people take control of them, and it makes life miserable for a lot of people all over the planet. So let's talk about it a bit more seriously and stop sniggering. And so that's what, as I said earlier, that's what I'm trying to do with my guests, is to get the point across, hopefully. So when somebody listens to something on Spotify a few years down the line, because they're taking it a bit more seriously, hopefully somebody important listens to that. They hear a whole lot of voices from the past and the present, and they go, those voices actually know what they're talking about. It's not dumb what they're saying. Yeah, what they're saying makes a lot of sense. And that's all I'm trying to get across especially with the podcast, is there's a lot of extremely bright people out there who have chosen this as their speciality. And before we finish, I'd like to say there's a lot of very young, bright people out there. So I'm working with a few people just coming out of college now, created a thing called Cannabis Law Students Association, where I'm trying to pull out the best people coming out of law school. So, and start giving them a space to be able to talk about what the industry, what the sector is, because essentially it's that generation that will shape it. It's not our generation. Right. And it's not even people in their 30s. It's people in their 20s who are actually going to shape what will become the reality sensible cannabis, psychedelics, cocaine, heroin, opiates, whatever, industries, sectors, areas of regulation, I like to call them, because that's what is inevitably going to happen. And people, our generation aren't grown up enough to have this discussion. I'm noticing that if I speak to people in their early 20s, it's a no brainer to have this discussion
So the thing is, I agree with the fact that making sure we have information out there to educate those coming into the space, whether they're getting certified through various programs, or there's actually college degrees and credits that are out there now for those students to come into the space. Like, we do need those that are going to be educated, recruited, brought into the space. They're going to get a chance to go ahead and find the pipeline to find work in the space. There's going to be a lot of job in the industry right now. One of the things I want to make a point back to, going back to editorial, is that for me, because I don't have a dog in a fight, like, I'm not part of a company that if I say anything, it's going to affect stock price. It's not going to affect anything. I just feel like I like the fact that what I do with my show is I take an editorial stance on certain issues. Where it comes to compliance, I'll constantly talk about companies. Be proactive. If you need to go to GMP status, do it. I know it's going to be cost more. But the thing is, we're coming back with final questions with Sean Hawking, owner of the Cannabis Law Report. By the way, the website is cannabislaw.report. And the National Interdisciplinary Cannabis Symposium, so all one word, NationalInterdisciplinaryCannabisSymposium.com. Check out those websites as we go to break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're on the home stretch here on Blunt Business. Final questions here with Sean Hawking, owner of Cannabis Law Report, the Karma Koala podcast, of which he hosts, and the National Interdisciplinary Cannabis Symposium. I want to go ahead and be able to and make it a message to those out there, because I realize what voice I have in the platform. So I will be editorial, but I mean, it's also in support of the industry, and it's also staying apolitical as well. I never bring politics in any of my programming. I don't like to do that. It just clutters too much. If I'm going to speak politically, it's going to be the fact that I want cannabis passed. I want cannabis legal. I don't care who does it. I just want it done.
I mean, I think that's the one great thing about cannabis in the US. It's one of the few people use it politically, but generally it's actually much less political than any other jurisdiction around the world. So if you look at Australia, there's a very big distinction between what we'd call the left and the right on view. But actually in the US there isn't. Just certain individuals know which buttons to press to get certain things they want at certain times. But essentially across the board, everybody knows this is something that's got to happen at some stage. And everybody knows that certain people like to put the stop on it because it's politically expedient for them to do it. They don't actually believe in what they're doing half the time. There is a very mature view to cannabis, and generally an increasingly mature view to a range of illegal substances or compounds in the US. It's just when to tackle it amongst all the other things. And, you know, whereas somewhere like the UK is very immature on these things still.
Right.
So the US really, in terms of not just the politicians, but people generally, whether they agree or disagree with it, you know, they've seen what the Sackler family have done. And I think most people say, well, you know, we really need to have a better understanding and control on these things, because otherwise we don't want cocaine cartels from Mexico or the Sackler family ruining members of our family's lives forever moving forward. I think Americans have come to that realization over the last 10, 15 years, whereas around the world, a lot of places still haven't come to that sort of realization that, you know, doesn't matter on either side of the equation. There are people who aren't nice, and they need to be put out of the equation, and common sense needs to come in.
So one of the things I want to bring up that you brought up into your the work right here is there's a website you mentioned, and there was a particular event that's coming up December 1st through the 3rd, Portland, Oregon, the 2nd National Interdisciplinary Cannabis Symposium. What can you tell me about that, and how I see the Cannabis Law Report is a partner in this. What can you tell me about this coming up?
Yeah, this is a symposium stroke conference founded by a retired judge based in Brooklyn. She was originally from Brooklyn. She's based in Denver now, called Mary Celeste. And she worked in the courts in the federal courts as a judge in Colorado for many years. She is very well connected in that world, and saw that there wasn't a great deal of knowledge amongst people in the courts about the cannabis world. And, you know, and if and when federal comes along, unless that knowledge base is increased, it's going to close in the way that, say, the immigration courts are being clogged up at the moment. She launched the first one at the Southern California Law School, University Law School last year, because that's where she went to law school. And then her former partner, judge from Guam, Judge Torres, said, look, he just didn't have the time to do it this year. And I worked with her a bit last year. So I'm actually, we're a double act. She's the founder, I'm the organizer, and we're putting on the second one this year at Portland State University, as a in PDX, Oregon, from the 1st to the 3rd. And the idea is essentially all legal discussions in cannabis at conferences are attached to business conferences, mm-hmm. and basically discuss law and business. In this conference, for the first time, we've got the American Bar Association, the American Judges Association, and the National Judicial College, amongst other partners, all together under one umbrella. And that I can assure you, that's an absolute rarity to get them under one umbrella on any topic. But to get them under one umbrella on cannabis is nigh on a miracle. And it's caused a few headaches along the way, but we've managed to do it. And we're trying. Yeah, essentially, the idea is to bring in the best people that are across a number of topics, anything from DUI to legal information to diversity, you name the topic, we're covering it over the 2 days. And
I noticed you're actually on the second day of panels, you're going to be moderating cannabis legal information. I see.
Well, that's right, because there is none.
Right. I also noticed that one of the people on the panel is David C. Holland, who I've actually got a chance to interview as well. And I saw Sherman Early Powell is going to be speaking at the event. It's that's quite right. a listing of people you have that are being part of this event. And, you know, at some point, I'd love to get some of those folks over at Cannabis Radio to go ahead and talk about
we've
this.
Even managed to get Blumenauer on, which is very nice indeed. And we only asked once and he said yes. We didn't even have to chase him.
Wow.
So these people understand that unless we educate government departments, legislators, policymakers, and the judiciary, nothing is going to happen if Washington can sign as many pieces of paper as they like. But unless federal government and state government is better educated on these topics and better understands them and is creating policy papers and educational materials now for their departments, it's going to be absolute chaos. So what we're trying to do is do two things. Take business out of cannabis and law for a little bit.
Right.
And try and talk about the public sector and how they now need to get a better grip on cannabis. And the reaction, you know, we're small. We don't have a huge marketing budget, but in terms of the speakers, right, we've got a fantastic reaction. It would be lovely to get some more people coming along or being virtual attendees. Of course, you know, we clash. We're just 2 days after MJ Biz. We're at the same time as CANRA, which is the Regulators Association. Mm-hmm. Normal are holding a conference the following week as well. I mean, it's a very busy calendar, and we're sort of new boys and girls on the block, so to speak. Right. But I think, you know, what we're doing, people are noticing. And we're seeing, you know, year one and year two, we're starting something new. And we're hoping by year three, year four, people will really understand the value to them in the industry of making these connections within state and federal government, and especially within the judiciary, so that they have a better understanding. Because, the judiciary, generally peopled by people over the age of 50, very conservative, not conservative in the crazy GOP conservative word at the moment, but conservative in the old fashioned, you know, middle of the road conservative will listen to an argument and decide one way or the other. That's their job. And this is what they want to hear. They want, we're presenting in a way as it's almost as though they're in court when they hear our presentations. It's pros, cons, and an expert witness. So they're hearing, you know, the good, the bad, and what the expert witnesses have to say. And then they can make their decisions on what they need to do internally with regard to the information that they've been presented with. So we're quite old-fashioned in the way that we're doing things. Yeah. But I think if you're not going to bring these people on board. And you know, this is one thing I'm still having difficulty with the industry per se, is understanding how important this is, because obviously everybody has, you know, if you're working in a company, you've got the bank to worry about. You've got, as we discussed at the very beginning, we've got the tax office to worry about. We've got the people who've lent you money to worry about. We've got the tech to worry about. But, you know, all these things are important in running your day-to-day business. But essentially everything changes when federal comes along. Everything changes again. And if those people who have been charged with managing this stuff don't understand, we're back to 2015 again, basically. And then that's another 30 years, you know, and it's a much bigger problem, much bigger bowl of soup second time round than it is the first time round. Yeah. And you combine the state bowl of soups, you know, 50 bowls of soup with then a huge bowl of soup. It's going to get pretty mixed up. So it's all, you know, it's not the economy stupid, it's education stupid, basically.
And I appreciate you put all these people together from their podcast with Cannabis Law Report and what you're reporting there, and from all the resources that you put together. So there's, you know, first of all, the Cannabis Law Report, that's the regular, you know, daily, go there, cannabislaw.report. You have Cannabis Law Journal. You have various directories, the Global Top 200 Cannabis Lawyers. And another directory is the Global Top 200 Cannabis Lawyers and Policy Makers Directory. I want to just ask one more thing before we get running, and I wish we had more time. I mean, there's a lot more I'm sure we could talk about when it comes to your work in legal book selling, publishing, working at LexisNexis and the Legal 500. But I want to ask you this last question about where the legal space is when it comes to cannabis, that now psychedelics has brought into the space. And there are quite a few companies we've seen at the, when our cannabis radio crew went to the MAPS conference, Psychedelic Science, they had seen a lot of cannabis-related folks there, even Rolling Stone and I forget what was Vice or which other publication talked about it, but they went to the event and they saw this intersectionality of cannabis and psychedelics coming into the space because they're kind of parallel in terms of their trajectory in the coming to the space to help as plant medicine. What are you seeing from those that you're speaking with about how many of them are embedding themselves or now including psychedelics into their workload? And those that are, you know, their enthusiasm about psychedelics coming into space, possibly being legalized before cannabis does.
Yeah, well, in terms of the law, a lot of them, basically. So if you're a small and medium-sized law firm that specializes in cannabis, you are now specializing in psychedelics. Some of them have gone completely psychedelics. So some of them were like a company like a law firm like Emerge, for example, entirely psychedelics now. But a lot of the other SME firms would say between 30 and 50 lawyers or, you know, 10 and 40 lawyers, they are all including psychedelics in their, you know, offerings. And that's all sort of been this year. It's going to be interesting literally post this week post yesterday after Newsom saying he's not going to sign that bill until they come back to him with some new stuff next year. Because I think they were all gearing up for a lot of business in California opening up, you know, by Christmas or early next year. So it might put a slight stop on it. But essentially, you're going to see you're already seeing a lot of independent operators, you know, solo lawyers doing it. A few just concentrating entirely on psychedelics. And I would imagine that's mainly because they've got some big pharmaceutical clients, and then a range of them with a mix of clients that are government based as government tries to bring in legislation in each of the states, or some sort of regulation one way or the other. I wouldn't be surprised if Newsom signs something that comes back to him next year, where you don't start seeing some of the bigger law firms, you know, the big white shoe law firms also. Some of them are already doing deals, but quietly. This is how they started in cannabis. They did a bunch of deals. They never told anybody what they were doing. It's all, you know, in there. And then they started marketing out their skills once they did the first sets of deals. And I think you'll probably start seeing that later next year. So my policymakers directory is actually Psychedelic Lawyers Policy Directory. I started it 2 years ago. The third edition will be published on the 1st of January. And, you know, when I first did it, I couldn't find 200 psychedelic lawyers or policymakers around the world, never mind right in the US. Now I'm going to be spoiled for choice in terms of editorial choice, who I choose. It's the same when I started the cannabis one. I started it with maybe, you know, I chose 200 out of maybe 500.
Right. No, what a difference a couple of years it makes. Exactly. I want to just make one more point and let go and talk about the symposium. I want to just make sure that for those that get a chance to catch this episode before, it's December 1st through 3rd. And I saw that the registration, it's available, like you said. It's in person, or you can actually get there virtually. And also students recommended and definitely encouraged to go ahead and go look at the event register. It's only $60, $57, just to go ahead and watch all the events going on. If you're a student and you want to go ahead and watch this, or if you're a part of other organizations, there's virtual as well available. So for those that want to go ahead and be able to catch all these events, the website is nationalinterdisciplinarycannabissymposium.com. All one word. nationalinterdisciplinarycannabissymposium.com. Again, we mentioned cannabislaw.report. And, of course, that's where you can find the Karma Koala podcast. You can find it there at cannabislaw.report and look for that. And when they go to the website, where do they find it from the start of the website?
In terms of the symposium?
The podcast.
Skim down the site a bit, and you'll see a column dedicated to it. Or simplest thing, if you're a Spotify user, just go to Spotify, pump in Karma Koala, pump in podcast, and hey presto, you're there. You've got 110 odd episodes to listen to.
And there's a nice green banner, a nice size green banner right there on the front page of Cannabis Law to Report. Everything you can find right there. Sean Hawking, thank you again for being on with us. I really appreciate you taking time out and sharing your story with us and telling us about the podcast and getting a chance to delve into some of the legal issues and being able to go ahead and bring scholars, lawyers, judges, and so many other people in the legal space on board. Really appreciate it.
Now, thank you very much for having me on the show. Been a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, as always, for listening to another year of wonderful programming here on Blunt Business. And we look forward to having you come on back next year. Talk to you in 2024.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.